The following is a production of Omnis.tv.
On this episode of Revelator, I welcome music guest Lion Eyes, March Madness Bracket Help, the top movies, music news, and wild crazy crimes. All this and more here on Revelator.
Delivering the goods at every freaking turn.
Welcome to Revelator, my man. You know what? We got a cool show tonight. We definitely do. Man, first off, I want to start off by saying this. Everyone that checked out the Revelator 50th show and was part of that, really appreciate it. You know, spreading the word, retweeting the links and all the good stuff. And we really appreciate it. And we're going to keep on keeping on. And tonight's guest, Lion Eyes, I think you're really, really going to dig. If you're not familiar with these guys, Jetpack Soundtrack, I'm going to say that. And you're going to hear a lot about Jetpack Soundtrack and the band Lion Eyes tonight on the show. You're really, really going to dig it. I hope everybody had a nice St. Patrick's Day as well. I'm not a green beer drinker, but I am a beer drinker on occasion. So I did partake in a couple of drinks through the weekend, St. Patrick's Day. Nothing too crazy. I didn't, I didn't get drunk and start a fight, or I didn't wear a kilt, and forget to wear undergarments or anything like that. So, So there you go. If you have any interesting St. Patrick's Day stories, definitely share them with me on Twitter, Ryan_unsigned. I would. And I know some of you are like, "Oh, do I? Here we go. Here comes Ryan's story time on St. Patrick's Day." But you know what? The times that I did celebrate St. Patrick's Day, really, I just don't remember any of them. So there you go. I don't have any, interesting, crazy St. Patrick's Day stories because, well, apparently I can't recall many of them, which I guess means that I had some pretty fun St. Patrick's Days. But, speaking of St. Patrick's Day, a Michigan teacher has made a poor choice by giving non-alcoholic beer to fifth graders as a history lesson. This takes place in the good old state of Michigan. The superintendent by the name of Ed said the teacher allowed Hyatt Elementary students in Michigan to sample Old Duels that they had brought in early March to represent a common ale in the early 1700s. Probably a better way to go about, talking about the early 1700s and drinking and such. Here, kids, I brought in some Old Duels. Now, Old Duels does carry a very, very small amount of alcohol. Obviously, the teacher has been released of her duties, and no charges have been filed as of yet, but that obviously remains to be seen. I'd imagine that, losing your job and just being a complete idiot is probably sufficient enough in this scenario. I'm sorry. I'm just thinking about, these fifth and sixth graders, chilling, drinking some Old Duels, just straight up we're drinking beer in school, And apparently they ended up finding, the reason that it kind of got out is because some of the students actually stole a couple bottles of Old Duels that the teacher had brought into the class. So they're, a couple rebels out there, they're probably like, man, I got a couple Marlboro Lights and an Old Duels, it's hardcore party night at the elementary school dance, Like, you want to go to the school dance with me? I snagged some Old Duels. Yeah. Man. Watch out for those guys when they get in high school. Those are the cool kids there, man. They're going to be in a lot of trouble. They're the ones that are throwing the party at the Moon Tower, if you know where I'm going with that. But this is a really good one. And, it's very rare that you can combine a stabbing and NASCAR together. But you know what? In the great state of Tennessee, that's just how it goes. This actually takes place in Tennessee. I tell you that it's Southern Belle because it's just so great. A Tennessee woman is accused of smashing her car into a church and stabbing her husband in the chest because she said the devil was in her. Yeah, there you go. That's a good setup, right? Stephanie Hammond, 23, was charged with attempted first-degree murder and felony vandalism. Shortly after 10 p.m. This past Sunday, her husband, Steven, told authorities that his wife drove her car through the front door of a church after she called him. When he arrived to get her, he found her lying in front of the altar. His wife allegedly said, "The devil is in me," before stabbing him in the chest with a kitchen knife. Don't know why she's driving around with a kitchen knife, but I guess if you think that you're talking to God and the devil's inside of you, you know, why not carry a kitchen knife around? Now, I guess Stephen managed to pull the knife from his body and return to his apartment to alert authorities. The Churchill Police Department took the woman into custody after finding her in an emergency room. And allegedly she said, she calmed down in the hospital, I don't know, said the reason she stabbed her husband was because he watched too much NASCAR. Meow. This is your NASCAR update of the month, by the way.
Tony, what angered you at the end of the race? What did you take issue with?
What the hell do you think I was mad about? One little runs us clear down to the infield. He wants to about everybody else. And he's the one that drives like a little I'm going to bust his ass.
Oh, bust his ass. Well, she obviously is going to bust his ass, too. Stephanie Hammond is going to bust your ass and stick you with a kitchen knife because the devil is inside of her. She stated God had told her that smoking marijuana all day and all night was not good for her and that she only needed to smoke it at night to help relax, according to Police Chief Mark Johnson, who said that Miss Hammond further stated that she felt her husband was worshiping NASCAR. And she's going to bust his ass. Obviously, she just stabbed him. NASCAR. Meow. And that, the devil put that in her head that she needed to, teach him a lesson, I guess, so to speak. And said, the devil told me to take the kitchen knife with me. She says, I like smoking pot because sometimes I see things that other people don't see. She's like, isn't God good? He told me this would happen, and look, I'm okay. Alrighty. So, I don't know what kind of marijuana she's smoking, but obviously, old Stephanie needs some assistance, in the mental field here. So, you know, I kind of feel bad, you know, if obviously in her state of mind, obviously is very fragile, but, man, you know, I hate to poke fun, but man, what a weird story that my husband worships NASCAR and the devil is in me. And that's some weird stuff, man. You know, anybody want to come on down to the South and hang out for a little bit with me? Anyone? No? Okay. Speaking of, this is a good one. This takes place in Cincinnati, Ohio. And, I think everybody has a memory of maybe going to McDonald's with their parents, or maybe, you have kids and you've taken them there to, to go play in the play balls and stuff. But anyway, this is a really good one. Not really good. It's also really sad, disturbing, but that's what you get here, This particular couple, you want to talk about, parents of the year. They take their kids, to McDonald's. Maybe they give them some processed chicken and nuggets and fries that are too salty. They're like, the salt is burning my lips. They're like, shut up and eat the fries. It doesn't matter. You eat the fries and go play in the playpen. No, but it's burning my lips. Shut up and eat them. These two parents, not only do they, they're just shoving salty fries and chicken nuggets down their kid's gullet, But they're like, we're going to go to the play place and let the kids kind of play around. And we're just going to shoot up some heroin while we're there. And one of the parents actually overdosed in the play area. And the other one was unresponsive when the authorities arrived. So they hate their kids at McDonald's, give them the Happy Meals, the toys. Here's your soft drink. Go play. Mommy and daddy have some fire to burn, like. So I can't imagine going to the McDonald's in Cincinnati, and seeing this couple just passed that one passed it on the floor drooling, Uma Thurman style from Pulp Fiction. The other one just kind of there, just like heroin, apparently they're being held on $10,000 bond. Tamika Lynn and Robert Paul Palmer. Those are classics right there, man. And, yeah, so, and I really feel bad for the kids, man. Yeah, 5 and 8 years old, obviously these two don't need to, be around children at all. Oh my gosh. We laugh and joke about that stuff. Man, it's just really sad too. Maybe something kind of make you chuckle. Hey, I have a couple of bummer stories here, mentally disturbed woman from Tennessee and two junkies in Ohio. So we're off to a good start, no doubt. The police in the United Kingdom reportedly shut down a busy motorway in England and searched for a man's missing penis. Yeah. The 40-year-old man said that he was in a distressed state because he said that he reported that his penis had been cut off. BBC reported that a 22-year-old man later arrested on suspicion of assault. That's a heck of an assault charge there. You know, you go to prison, they're like, what happened to you? Like, I assaulted a guy, cut his penis off. They're like, whoa, hey, all right. No shower sex with this guy over here, you know? Unbelievable, man. Detachable penis. And it's funny that this story came up because I was actually talking with the guys from Will Powerless, based out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, who were on the show this past summer. And I don't know if anybody remembers that episode called The Wristwatch. Detachable wristwatch. I encourage you to go check that out at omnes.tv. Again, it's omnes.tv. Really good show. And also really cool music. The guys from Will Powerless, really cool dudes. And recording some new material right now. So looking forward to having them back on in the summer. Heading on to music news. Along with Will Powerless, we got some other good stuff. The Dillinger Escape Plan guitarist Ben Weinman is composing a film score for the movie Alien Abduction, which is based on a true story. It's supposed to be released April 4th. I don't know if anybody's familiar with Dillinger Escape Plan or not, but I can't think of a better guitarist to write a score for an alien abduction film. That sounds really great. A big tour that was announced this past week. Soundgarden and Nine Inch Nails announced a tour together, which is going to span North America along this summer. Trent Reznor and Chris Cornell have not always been on the best terms. Back in 2009, Chris Cornell issued a solo album, Scream, which had his fair share of critics, including mine. Among the critics was Trent Reznor, who tweeted to his followers, "You know that feeling when someone's just embarrassing themselves really badly? You feel really uncomfortable? Heard Chris Cornell's new record? Jesus." I can't agree more. That album is terrible. I'm sorry. Chris Cornell, huge fan, great writer, great songwriter, but that album Scream he did with Timberland or whatever, oh, dreadful. Just absolutely awful. Shepherd Fire Tour. This is a really tour I'm excited about. Also, Adrenaline Mob, who just released their second album, Men of Honor, are going to be joining Avenged Sevenfold and Hell Yeah for 12 shows in the U.S. and Canada, April and May. The band will also do headlining shows in support of Hell Yeah. Also, later in the summer, Adrenaline Mob will also tour with Avenged Sevenfold in 2014, and also heading into 2015 as well. Man, unfortunately, that show is not coming anywhere near my location, so you just have to go online and check that out and see if it's coming. They're only playing 12 shows. Man, that's a beat. I mean, Avenged Sevenfold, Hell Yeah, and Adrenaline Mob, that's going to be a pretty kick-ass bill right there. Killer Be Killed is a super new side project featuring Max Cavalera from Soulfly, Troy Sanders from Mastodon, and Dave Elch from ex-Mars Volta. The album is set to be released May 13th. And also, Greg from the Dillinger Escape Plan is also on that project as well. So you have basically members from Dillinger Escape Plan, Soulfly, and Mastodon, and the Mars Volta all on one band. And I can't wait to hear that. That's going to be great. Should be very interesting stuff. Now, a trailer, a proposed documentary about Madison, Wisconsin's Smart Studios features some famous faces, Dave Grohl, Billy Corgan, and Butch Vig, and you know, obviously the producer of Garbage as well. And obviously the birthplace of such notable albums as Nirvana's Nevermind, Smashing Pumpkins' Gish, Fall Out Boy's Take This to Your Grave all came from Smart Studios. They actually have a Kickstarter program for this. They've received $25,000 in pledges right now, and they're looking to raise $120,000 by March 30th. And my first thought was this. Awesome. I'm a fan of Kickstarters and, you know, obviously, you know, bands using that particular platform. And then I realized I look at the names that are associated with this documentary. Dave Grohl, Billy Corgan, Butch Vig. I'm pretty sure these guys could probably fund their own documentary, right? I mean, I don't know. I just thought it was a little weird, you know, that these guys are asking people to fund a documentary, you know, about their experiences. Kind of an interesting take there. The Beastie Boys have settled a legal dispute battle over Goldie Box. It was an undisclosed amount of money over a toy company's viral video using the parody of the band's song Girls from 1987. Now, if you remember, when Adam Yount died, he actually had in his will that no songs that he's ever made would be used in advertisement. So the Beastie Boys are not taking money. What they're doing instead of the settlement is actually going to go towards charities for girls and underprivileged children to attend space programs and scientific programs and math programs and stuff. So kudos to the Beastie Boys holding true to the late Adam Yount's you know, request not selling out, not donating their music to any type of advertisement whatsoever, and then not taking money and actually using it for what really the you know, the Goldie Box ad was originally about anyway, which was promoting young women and underprivileged kids, you know, the option of getting into science and math and technology. So kudos to those guys. Beastie Boys definitely missed, man. And let's take a look at the box office this past week. The top movies, starting with number 10 and working our way up to number 1. The Monuments Men, $2 million. The movie Frozen, which just came out on DVD, is still the top 10 of the box office. And after 17 weeks, has made $396 million. The Grand Budapest Hotel, $3.6 million. Son of God, $5.3 million. The Lego Movie at $7.7 million. Single Moms Club at $8 million. Nonstop at $10 million. Need for Speed, $17.8 million. 300, Rise of an Empire, $19.2 million. Number one film this week at the box office was Mr. Peabody and Sherman. The second week at number one at $21.8 million. And Lion Eyes will be joining us in just a moment. Talking about their brand new album, Jetpack Soundtrack. Here's one of the tracks off that album. It's called Electric Reckoning here on Revelator.
Power goes.
Lionize here on Revelator with one of their new songs, Electric Reckoning. And I'm joined now by Chris Brooks from the band Lionize. Chris, thanks for cutting some time out, man. We appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Now, that song we just heard, Electric Reckoning, is off the new album, which came out middle of February, Jetpack Soundtrack. I love the title of that, and we'll get into talking about the title of the album. But first, I think a lot of these songs tonight that we're going to hear is a good indication of kind of a really nice sample of the actual album itself and what you guys are really all about, man. Now, the album under Weathermaker, which is Clutch's label, we've been fortunate to have Dan on from Clutch a couple months ago. Really cool dude. What was it like working with John Paul and those guys in Machine, working at the Machine shop there, you know, putting this album together? What was that like for you guys, man?
It was awesome. We've done pre-production with JP on previous albums, actually. Not as deep as this one, but it's sort of in the same process where we put together tunes or parts of tunes or jams or like whatever in our practice room, and then we'll go over to JP's studio and sort of, you know, suss out song forms and put things together and try things out in different places and talk about where things are going and what our intentions are, and this right here, we did that a bunch of times. I mean, we probably did 15 or 20, you know, rounds of just going to his house and, you know, listening to the stuff and, you know, playing it back and playing it differently, rearranging it. So it was really awesome, really intensive. No, like nothing we've done before, certainly. We probably changed the songs around like 6 or 7 times each, you know. And then Machine is, wow, you know, you bring it to him and he's a whole nother situation.
Right.
You know, he brings a whole nother perspective to the table, like the audience perspective, you know.
Now, those guys, obviously, you know, obviously with the arrangements and, you know, changing things and obviously pushing you guys musically and also professionally too. Obviously, I imagine a lot of talk of tone and in general kind of goes into each instrument, I would think there, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a huge, that's definitely a huge thing with Machine. And, Machine and John Paul doing in the same room for the drum tracking. There was certainly a lot of conversation that went over my head about right, gear and tones and the sounds of cymbals and different sizes of things and all that stuff and where to put the microphones and what to put around the microphones. And there was lots of, especially when it came down to the actual tracking of the instruments, there was great time and energy taken into the tones. I mean, we spent, I think, 8 days recording just keyboards, like 12-hour days of just keyboards, wow, main machine thing, and tooling with pedals and plugging the organ into different scenarios, and, you know. So, yeah, we got deep down any rabbit holes on this one.
Your hands hurt after 8 days? Were they just kind of testing to see how much you could play or something? Or?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, no, it was a lot of, like, you know, we'd be looping a section and playing it and playing it and playing it and just changing the tones and changing the tones and changing the tones, yeah. So... yeah, it was good. It was good exercise, you know.
Well, it's a well-crafted album. It really is, man.
Thank you.
I kind of want to do a reverse a little bit here. Now, you guys obviously work with John Paul a couple times. You guys, I actually saw you guys, I'm going to tell you about it, a little over a year ago now here in Nashville with Orange Goblin and Clutch. Right as Earth Rocker came out in Nashville, which was a great, fantastic show, man. Talk to me about your first meeting with those guys and how you were kind of approached by them about being on the label.
Well, I mean, meeting them goes way back to being, we were coming out of high school and our old drummer was taking lessons from this local, you know, kind of really awesome drum teacher who was also giving lessons to JP. So we sort of linked up there. And we got to get, I don't remember exactly how it worked, how we started going over, but I remember we'd go to JP's and jam and play like jam reggae stuff with him. And then we had some string of shows that was ending in New England. And he saw on their schedule they were in New England. So he was like, why don't you guys jump on a date? You know, so we jumped on one date with them and then we jumped on 3 dates after that and more and more and more. And eventually, you know, now we have the same agent and the same manager, and it was sort of a natural progression of things, I think, to move into doing something with Weathermaker. But I mean, they approached it, you know, very professionally through management and everything about being on the label. It was, you know, it was all very, I don't know, it was all very surreal.
I imagine so, but I mean, you know, obviously a fan of those guys for a long time, and you know, speaking with Daniel, and we had him on a couple months ago and stuff. Like, man, you always kind of you know, wonder like how you're gonna speak to someone like you know that you know hold in high regard, and they're just really nice guys, man. They really are. So it's kind of a kind of a calming factor, you know, talking to those guys. But it's gonna feel good though to. You know, obviously, you know, have a friendship, but also a professional level. And obviously those guys support you. And, you know, to be under a label that is going to push you creatively, musically, professionally, and kind of treat you as family, it's got to be pretty reassuring to be under that type of umbrella, man.
Yeah, it's super reassuring. It's great to be on a label run by artists, you know?
Right.
I think artists understand what we're trying to get out of it, and we understand what they're trying to get out of it, and it's all very clear and on the table, and you know, nothing funny.
Yeah, that's got to be a big time relief, man. Not everybody gets, you know, we've heard all kinds of stories when it comes to that stuff, but, you guys have a really wide range, musically from, you know, like reggae, you know, funk, blues, soul, rock, you know, obviously some, you know, some metal, kind of a hodgepodge of a lot of different categories, which I think is really cool about you guys. For you personally, man, if you had to pick your top five artists, influential artists, who would they be?
Just myself personally.
Yes.
I would say, top five. Miles Davis. Deep Purple. So I guess John Lord, right?
Yep.
Led Zeppelin. Bill Evans. And Sly and the Family Stone.
Very nice. That's definitely it. Yeah, it is. That's definitely a really awesome mix of music. And do you have like a guilty pleasure band at all? Like, is there like a newer band out there? You're like, man, I really dig these guys for whatever reason. Like, you know, that may not be. Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if I would call a newer band a guilty pleasure. Just because I wouldn't want to be rude. But right. I don't know. I think of, you know, I definitely like Journey and some of that more cheesy 80s stuff that's just like, you know, unforgivably cheesy, but so amazingly well played that you just, you know, as a musician, you can't help but like, you know, like Foreigner and that kind of stuff. Like super very cheesy, cool. But just killer musician shit. I don't know. That's where those are my guilty pleasures lie.
Very cool, man. Now, the album, Jetpack Soundtrack, I have to ask you at this point, how did you guys come up with the title of the album, man, which I really love, by the way.
The title was, I don't know, there was the Jetpack song, and then we were just tooling around with lots of different word combinations involving sort of future and music and sort of stylistic elements of where we were going, and Jetpack Soundtrack was just one of those two-word combinations that popped up and just popped out, and was like, wow, that's really cool, you know? Right. It's descriptive in a lot of different ways of what the music is, you know, we thought, at least at the time. You know, it's definitely the pace of the music is accelerated, and we think it has more of a futuristic, it certainly has more of a futuristic vibe lyrically, and hopefully also, you know, in an actual artistic content wise sense, it does as well, you know?
No, I think it definitely fits. Do you remember any of the rejected titles by chance of combination words? Do you remember any come to mind at all?
Electric Reckoning was a rejected title. That was the. I think it was either Jetpack Soundtrack or Electric Reckoning at one point. We had to take a vote. But there was tons of them. I don't have the list. Had the list laying around for a while.
Right on. Well, I'll tell you what, man, let's take a break. This is the first single off the album, which is titled Reality Check. You guys also have a lyric video for this as well. Is there anything you would like to, you know, say or set up about this this particular track before we play it?
Reality Check. It's the single because we thought it was the most singly of songs, you know. So I don't know if we necessarily thought it was the best, but it's A to B to C, we felt like it was a good single. So there it is.
Right on. Well, hey, this is Lionize here on Revelator. Lionize here on Revelator. That is Reality Check, the first single off the album Jetpack Soundtrack. Talking with Chris Brooks, who's the keyboard player and also vocalist for the band. Now, I'm always curious how bands form, Chris. Do you recall your first meeting with the guys, and how you guys kind of got together? I know you mentioned earlier in the interview you had a different drummer or something. Kind of the merging of the lineup that it is right now.
Well, Nate and I had gone to high school together, so we started jamming together. We had a mutual friend who was that drummer that I mentioned before, so I sort of jammed with him in like the jazz band in school and a couple other things on the side, and he was jamming with him in a rock band, and actually the original bass player of that rock band way back was Hank, the bass player now for Lionize, and he left and went to college. They asked me to come and play keys for him, so that's how it ended up that me and Nate started playing together in a rock band. And then like a year or so later, Hank had come back from college, and our bass player quit. We asked him to join up, and that was probably 10 or so years ago. And so the three of us have been playing together since then, you know. And we're all just from, basically from the same place. You know, he went to the high school down the road. And we've had a couple different drummers. Now we're working with Chase, who we know from, he was touring with Cortez, JP's drum tech. So, keeping it all pretty tight.
Very nice, man. It's kind of cool to come across bands that, you know, where you kind of all knew one another and kind of came up together and stuff. I really dig that. It's kind of the old school way of kind of getting there, you know, and you guys have been around for a while, have several albums out. The name itself, Lionize, is that something that you and Nate had come up with, or was that something that kind of later came to be, or?
No, that came to be while the three of us were together. We were starting another band with a different, I think we had a guitar player leave, or I don't remember what it was. We were changing our name, and we didn't know what to call the band. You know, we were, I think we needed a name to get to put on the poster for whatever gigs we had booked. And, we were desperate to find a name. We just started like digging through the dictionary. And I think it was Hank actually who stumbled on Lionize. Originally just thought it looked cool in print. And I was like, oh, look at me. To kind of like put something up on a pedestal to, you know, celebritize. That's kind of cool for a band. And then boom, so we did it, and it's stuck, and we've been using it ever since. We never changed. And now it's become, you know, a thing of its own, I suppose.
Well, that's, I think the name, and I always, you know, curious, do you remember names that didn't make the cut? I think I ask everybody this every show. That's kind of one of our box questions there, you know? Like, do you remember any names that, you know, that you picked out of the dictionary where we're like, oh, we should, you know, call ourselves?
I don't remember any of the ones that were in there running at that time. Right before that, we had called ourselves Catch a Fire, like the Bob Marley record. But then we figured that was pigeonholing. And we weren't even trying to play really reggae then, which was the ironic thing about starting to do it later. We just thought it was a cool record, you know.
Very nice, but no, I know you guys.
That was the only one. Like, we went from that to Lionize. Yeah, I don't remember any of that, but it was so long ago now.
Yeah, like I said, I'm always curious. So sometimes, you know, people come up like, "Yeah, we were going to call ourselves, you know, spicy mustard or so, you know, some kind of crazy name, you know," and they're like,
right.
When they look back and they're like, oh man, I'm glad I totally didn't pick that name, you know.
Thank God we didn't do that. Right.
Yeah. Coming to the stage, spicy mustard. Now, you guys have some shows coming up at the back end here, of March. You guys are actually playing in Knoxville, Tennessee, on St. Patrick's Day. That actually sounds like it's going to be a pretty good time. And then you're heading to Europe, do a bunch of shows. What's the packing process for you guys from, you know, playing to the States, but, you know, and then going to, you know, Europe? What's that kind of change for you? Is there certain things that you kind of want to make sure you take with you, or, you know, you would leave behind, you know, versus, you know, just playing, you know, shows on the East Coast or something?
I don't know. We're kind of sussing that out at the moment, actually. We have this, it's our first time going over there. So for us, we can't just bring all of our gear, you know, right. You can't just fly across the ocean with big amplifiers and stuff. That would be way too costly. So we're figuring out how to work out, you know, an amplifier backline over there. We'll bring guitars, hopefully, one or less keyboards, find a way to get drums over there, probably fly with cymbals. And then you have this regular luggage, and then we have to rent, a van and a trailer and hire a tour manager to drive the van and trailer, since none of us want to drive a van and trailer in England. I don't even know if we're allowed to try to do that, but we don't want to. So it's definitely a completely different ordeal, you know.
We've
been through experience. We've flown, from the East Coast to the West Coast a couple times to start tours or to do recording projects and things like that, but we've never gone completely overseas to play shows. So it's all new for us.
Yeah, I mentioned the driving process there, you know, and the learning curve getting over there in a place. Obviously, yeah, you'd have no idea where you're going, what you're doing. Obviously, GPS, I imagine, will help quite a bit with that stuff nowadays. But, I guess probably a lot of people don't think about the packing and the traveling overseas and, you know, the equipment and those type of things that, you know, that are involved with making a trek over to Europe. Are you guys playing with Clutch over there in Europe, or?
Yeah, that's what the tour is. Yeah, it's a tour. It's a Clutch. It's all it's in the UK with Clutch.
Gotcha.
England,
okay.
And Ireland and Scotland.
Well, at least you guys are going to be
20 dates or so, maybe 15 to 20 dates.
Awesome. Now, at least you guys are going to be over there. I mean, those guys have been over there quite a bit over the years. So at least you're going to be with, you know, obviously someone you know and familiar with. And obviously, you know, those guys have played over there several times. So at least you're going to have that to kind of lean on a little bit. Those guys seem like they'd be pretty cool on the road. They offer you any advice and stuff when you first started kind of gigging and touring with them?
I don't know. I think they're more of a lead by example type of crew more than anything, you know. We just see the way that their operation runs and how it's stress free and it works, and obviously they're out there building their name and you know, doing better and better, and you know, we just try to do what they do to you know, for the best for our career, basically, you know.
Right.
They're pretty quiet guys. They're not very presumptuous individuals, so yeah, I don't know if they ever, like, really, like, you know, bear down with wisdom. But they certainly do lead by example in every possible way, you know.
Very nice, man. Now, you know, you mentioned, you know, obviously, you know, traveling in the States. Is there anything you've actually lost on tour or forgot on tour that you needed the next night and you were like, ah, shit, I freaking left X item and, you know, such and such a place?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've done that with everything you could possibly imagine. Done it with keyboard stands, with the legs to my organ. I've done that with, we've done it with guitar pedals. I've done it with my cell phone, my wallet. Yeah, I pretty much lost everything on tour that you can imagine losing on tour at least once.
Most interesting item you've received on tour from a fan?
Most interesting item I've received on tour from a fan? Whew. I don't know. We receive a lot of weird stuff. Fans, I guess. One very, very awesome and nice thing a fan's done for us twice now was bake us a cake in like a really, really great, well done recreation of our album art. And they've done two albums so far, and the cake actually was delicious. So that was pretty cool.
Awesome, man. Well, Chris, I really dig what you guys are doing, man, and I appreciate you cutting the time out now. And I know people, you know, we're going to hear these songs and really dig what you guys are up to. If people want to go buy the album and find out more about what you guys are doing, how can they do so, man?
Well, if people want to buy the album, they can go to a Best Buy. They can go to a number of small record shop retailers. We'll have vinyls out there soon. I know our vinyls were late coming, but our vinyls will be out there, and they should be out in small record stores. You can go on iTunes. You could go to our website and like to indiemerch.com. Our website's lionizedmusic.com. If you Google Lionized, you have no excuse to not find us, basically. And, yeah, you can buy our album pretty much anywhere you can buy albums.
Very cool, man. Well, Chris, best of luck to you guys wrapping up on the U.S. tour, and best of luck in the U.K. as well. We close out with a song that I really dig, which is Evolve. I'll steal your girlfriend and I'll eat your lunch. One of the lines in this song, which I dig. Talk to you about this particular track, man. One, it's a really feel good song. I really dig it, man. It's just kind of one of those, you know, if this song doesn't get your head bobbing, then you know, you might want to check yourself for a pulse. You know?
Yeah, our bass player Hank wrote the lyrics. It's pretty much just about growing up being a punk kid and having to, you know, grow up and evolve into a man. In short, yeah, that's where all those lines come from. Just, you know, a lot of it's like pulls and references out of our childhood and stuff like that, and punky little, you know, things that Henry, as a little young little jerk, was thinking in his brain probably.
Well, it's a really cool tune, man, and I think people are definitely going to dig it. Well, Chris Brooks, hey, man, best luck to you, and this is Lionize Evolve here on Revelator.
School, and we in regional park to settle everything.
Nice here on Revelator. That is Evolve, and thanks to Chris for coming on and cutting some time out, and best of luck to those guys touring in the UK as well. And for more information about this particular episode of Revelator, head on over to omnes.tv. Again, it's omnes.tv. Click on episode number 51. And of course, you can also see all our back episodes as well on the site. Also, find us on Facebook at facebook.com/omnes.tv. Again, that's omnes.tv. Click on the Revelator icon and look at some of the great artist interviews we've had on the broadcast. Also, some really funny stories and comedy bits we've done as well. Also, find me, Ryan_unsigned on Twitter. I'm always tweeting, and definitely tweet me some St. Patrick's Day stories. I definitely like to hear them. If you're like me and you can't remember any, let me know you can't remember any. I know you've had a couple good ones. NCAA March Madness. Anybody knows I'm a huge basketball fan, and this is always a really fun time for me as far as sports is concerned. March Madness and the NBA playoffs are right around the road, which obviously we'll talk about a little bit, but, the NCAA bracket, some tips for you. If you know nothing about anyone, just pick away. And typically, pick a couple episodes here and there. Typically, always go with the highest seed, more times than not. Typically, 5 seeds or higher. But if you know a little bit, my rule of thumb is, 1, it's coaching. 2, it's NBA talent. And obviously, matchups play a part in it, but pretty much it's coaching. College, it's coaching and NBA talent. Now, looking at the brackets here, Florida's number 1 overall seed. Not a whole lot there. Kansas, Florida is very intriguing. I think Kansas is very underrated. Virginia's the number 1 seed in the East bracket. I really think Michigan State underseeded number 4 in that bracket. That's why I have coming out of there. Arizona in the West. If there's some injury concerns there with Arizona, but I think they're really, really good. Oklahoma State, I think a little underseeded at number 9, was going to draw Arizona in the second round. That should be an interesting matchup with Marcus Smart and the kids from Arizona. But I'm taking Arizona to come out of that bracket. Wisconsin's there. I think Wisconsin is overseeded. I don't think they're really a 2-seed at all. And the rest of that bracket is, meh. You know, Baylor's pretty good. Oregon's pretty good. But I look for Arizona to come out of that. Now, the Midwest bracket. Poor Wichita State. You know, talking about screwing over a mid-major. Wichita State gets a number 1 seed. They're undefeated. They should. Listen to everybody's in their bracket. Number 2, Michigan. Number 3, Duke. Number 4, Louisville, who won the thing last year. And number 5, St. Louis. You know, St. Louis is a very underrated team. That's Rich Majerus is, you know, talent, really. He recruited, obviously. Rick is no longer with us. Really great coach. And also Kentucky is in that bracket. It looks like you're probably going to have Tennessee or Iowa in that bracket as well. I mean, Kansas State's in that bracket too. They did not do Wichita State any favors at all. Here's the number 1 seed. We're going to basically load your whole bracket up. I don't think Wichita State is going to come out of that bracket at all. I think it's either Duke or Michigan that's going to come out of that bracket. And they're going to have to play one another in the Sweet 16. Whoever wins that, I think, goes on to the Final Four. So that's a little help from me to you there as far as your March Madness bracket is concerned. Again, thanks to the guys from Lionize for stopping in. Chris, nice talking with you. Mike, wonderful job as always. And we've got some more really great guests coming up along the way, so definitely keep it locked here on Revelator, Omnis.tv. Hey, it seems harder to enjoy the finer things in life. Until next time, do so, everybody.
This was episode 51, Jetpack Soundtrack. For show notes or links to topics discussed on this episode of Revelator, or to experience previous episodes, head on over to omnes.tv, that's omnes.tv, and click on Revelator. Thanks for listening.